Eti visruta chirodain avrata sriman yojan ayuta uchta Shri Sukha Uvacha, Shri Sukadeva Goswami said, Asit, there was Girivara, very big mountain, Rajan, O King, Trikuta, iti, thus, Visruta, celebrated, Shira Udena, by the ocean of milk, Avrata, surrounded, Sriman, very beautiful. Yojana, 8 miles. Ayutam, 10,000. Uchataha, very high. Translation, Sukadeva Goswami said, my dear king, there is a very large mountain called Trikuta. It is 10,000 yojanas, or 80,000 miles high. Being surrounded by the ocean of milk, it is very beautifully situated. Text 2 and 3, the length and breadth of the mountain are of the same measurement, 80,000 miles. Its three principal peaks, which are made of iron, silver, and gold, beautify all directions and the sky. The mountain also has other peaks, which are full of jewels and minerals, and are decorated with nice trees, creepers, and shrubs. The sounds of the waterfalls on the mountain create very pleasing vibration. In this way, the mountain stands, increasing the beauty of all directions. The ground at the foot of the mountain is always washed by waves of milk that produce emeralds all around in the eight directions. Purport from Srimad Bhagavatam, we understand there are various oceans. Somewhere there's an ocean filled with milk, somewhere an ocean of liquor, an ocean of ghee, an ocean of oil, an ocean of sweet water. Thus, there are different varieties of oceans within this universe. The modern scientists have only a limited experience, cannot defy these statements. They cannot give us full information about any planet, even the planet on which we live. From this verse, however, we can understand that if the valleys of some mountains are washed with milk, this produces emeralds. No one has the ability to imitate the activities of material nature as conducted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Text 5, the inhabitants of the higher planets, Siddhas, Charanas, Gandharvas, Vidyadharas, serpents, Kinnaras, and Apsaras, go to that mountain to sport. Thus all the caves of the mountain are full of these denizens of the heavenly planets. Purport, as ordinary men may play in the salty ocean, the inhabitants of higher planetary systems go to the ocean of milk. They float in the ocean of milk and also enjoy various sports within the caves of Trikuta Mountain. Text 6, because of the resounding vibrations of the denizens of heaven singing in the caves, the lions there, being very proud of their strength, roar with unbearable envy, thinking that another lion is roaring in that way. Purport, in the higher planetary systems, there are not only different types of human beings, but also animals like lions and elephants. There are trees, and the land is made of emeralds, such as the creation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura has sung in regard Keshava, Tuya Jagata Vichitra. My Lord Keshava, your creation is colorful and full of varieties. Geologists, botanists, and other so-called scientists speculate about other planetary systems, but being unable to estimate the variety on other planets, they falsely imagine that all planets but this one are vacant, uninhabited, and full of dust. Although they cannot even estimate the varieties existing throughout the universe, they are very proud of their knowledge and they are accepted as learned by persons of a similar caliber. As described in Srimad Bhagavatam, Savitvara Hostra Karai Samstuta Purusha Pasu, materialistic leaders are praised by dogs, hogs, camels, and asses, and they themselves are also big animals. One should not be satisfied with the knowledge imparted by a big animal. Rather, one must take knowledge from a perfect person like Sukadeva Goswami, Mahajanayena Gata Sapanta. Our duty is to follow the instructions of the Mahajanas. There are 12 Mahajanas, and Sukadeva is one of them. Swayambhur, Narada Sambhu, Kumara Kapila Manu, Pralada, Janaka Bhishma Padya Vyasaki, Vayam. Vyasaki is Sukadeva Goswami. Whatever he says, we consider to be factual. That is perfect knowledge. So we have an introduction here to the story of Gajendra, Moksha, the deliverance of the elephant Gajendra by Hari, who appeared in the fourth Manvantara and became the Manvantara avatar. So this is just an introduction describing the place where the elephant lived. So in the fifth canto of Bhagavatam, there was a description of the different lokas. So we have Bhuloka or Bhumandala, which is in the middle. Below we have planets like Sutala, Talatala, etc., down to Patala Loka. And above we got Bhuvar, Svarga Loka, etc., all the way up to Brahma Loka. And in the middle, more or less, we have the Bhu sphere. So Bhu is called a mandala, or a big flat surface, so to speak, like a disc, whereas the planetary other higher planetary systems are not described in that way. So there is a description of Bhumandala. So in the center of Bhumandala, on our level, is a big mountain called Mount Meru. Very, very high, around which revolve all the planetary systems, like the sun. And this is situated on one dvipa, or one island, called Jambudvip. So that's the central island, and with Meru in the middle. More or less circular. On that Jambudvip, we have Bharat Varsha as one of the Varshas. Then there's a mountain range, and then beyond that there's another Varsha, and another Varsha. That's Hari Varsha and Kimpurusha Varsha. And then we work our way up to the middle, which has got the mountain on it, with Ketu Malavarsha on one side and Ilavritavarsha in the middle, like that. And then we have three Varshas on the top again. So southern side is Bharat Varsha. Around that we have ocean. That's the saltwater ocean. But around that, there's another island. So this is a strange looking island because it's not like an ordinary island. It's actually like a donut. It's surrounding the other ocean, which is circular. And it's also circular. and it's got mountain ranges on it like this. Then there's another ocean. Then there's another circular island with mountain range on it. Then there's another ocean. Then there's another circular island again. Another ocean like this. So this goes out. So we have rings of islands like this with different types of oceans in them. So we have the saltwater ocean. That's our particular ocean. And we get a milk ocean, as described here, the milk ocean. We get a yogurt ocean. We get a ghee ocean. We get a liquor ocean. We get a sugarcane ocean. And we get pure water ocean. That's the last one. So there, this is, and then beyond that, we get the local mountain range, etc., and then another expanse where nothing exists. It's all dark beyond that. So that's called the Bhumandala, which is represented downstairs in the center there with the circles. And those are the various dvipas. So, in those dvipas, we also have living entities. They're also divided up into areas like varshas, and they have their inhabitants also. And just as on our varsha, we have Bharat Varsha here, then we have other varshas, Kimparusha Varsha, Hari Varsha, etc. They're also considered heavenly planets, even though they're on Bhumandala. Yeah? So they're called Boma Svarga, as opposed to the heavenly Svarga sphere up above. And then there's another Svarga down below, called the Bila Svarga, which means a hole. Bila means a hole. So that's the hellish planets. It's also called Svarga. So we have Svarga here outside Bharat Varsha. We have Svarga Loka here. And then we have the other Dvipas, which are also like Svarga Loka. We cannot go there. We cannot go to the other Varshas. There's 9 Varshas on Jambudvip. We can only go to this Varsha, no other Varsha. Then we have the saltwater ocean. Then we have another Dvipa, and we can't go to that Dvipa either. Then there's another ocean, we can't go there. And then there's another Dvipa, I guess, expanding outwards. All more or less heavenly places. Okay? So this is a description of a milk ocean there somewhere, and with a huge mountain range. And of course, it's also heavenly in one sense because there's emeralds everywhere, green stones. They're everywhere on the ground. And this is the place where Gajendra lived, the elephant. So this is just the introduction to that story by describing the place, which is rather heavenly. And so it's described here in these later verses, verse 5, how the Gandharvas and Vidyadharas and Kinnaras and others would come there, and they would enjoy very nicely on the mountain and in the ocean. So, we have this description and of the place with a milk ocean, etc. And we have all these dvipas. And Prabhupada remarks that, of course, modern science doesn't accept this. If we go up in an airplane, we're not going to see a milk ocean, etc. If we use satellites also and go above the earth, we don't see that. So where is it? So there's a problem with our the scriptures and a contradiction with our observation. So how do we resolve that contradiction? One is to reject our sense perception. Okay, it's limited and there's other things we don't see, or it's false perception and it's not actually like that. And what they see when they take photographs with the satellites isn't true or whatever. That, of course, would be rather like, we could say, blind faith. Just ignoring the facts. But then how to resolve this question? If we say that that is true, then how can this be true? How can we have a Mount Meru? How can we have a Jambudvip and a saltwater ocean and a Plakshadvip and a milk ocean, etc.? And, of course, then we can ask, well, where did the milk come from? Where did the cows come from? Who milks the cows every day to get the milk? How did the yogurt get there? How did the ghee get there? How did they boil all the milk to get the ghee? Who made the liquor, whatever, and filled it up? Why doesn't the milk go bad? So there's many, many questions like that. So it looks like a mythological description. which means false description. A myth means something which isn't true. So, of course, the newspapers sometimes they hold Puranas are mythical, mythological, huh? Or scripture is mythological, they'll say. That's actually offensive because they say all scripture is false then. So mythological or myth means it's actually false. It's a story which is false. So many people in the modern world will take the Bhagavatam and other descriptions in the Bhagavatam, the stories and the people, as false. Or similarly with Mahabharata or Ramayana, as false. However, we also know that in all of these works, the Puranas, Mahabharata, Ramayana, there's also true things there. Historical truths also, like Dwarka, actually existed. It's not a false thing. Vrindavan exists. It's not a false place. Yeah? We have certain places mentioned in the Bhagavatam which really exist. Yeah? We have some truth there, and then we have these other things that don't look true. Why is that like that? If they want to make something completely untrue, yes, they can make a whole work untrue. But they mix the true and the untrue. So from our point of view, how is it possible? So they do have descriptions of real places. We have Hastinapur, which you can identify. We have Dwarka. We have other places, Ujjain and other places. You can identify in India, different states of India, which are mentioned in the Bhagavatam. So it's not that the people were completely blind and made an imaginary work. Yet then we wonder why these other parts are so strange. And then we'll think, well, they're not very scientific people. And this, of course, is the opinion of many historians and critics of India. The Indians weren't very scientific. But of course, we'll find similar contradictions in many cultures. The Greeks, were they scientific or not? So we say, oh yeah, they were scientific because we have Pythagoras and other people who made up the formulas and things like this. Or the Egyptians, they invented geometry, so to speak, in the Western world, etc. Okay, they're scientific. But yeah, they also have myths. They also have stories like this. In fact, many cultures have the story of the big mountain in the middle of the universe. Of course, it's also accepted by the Jains and the Buddhists, etc. Same thing, Mount Meru in the middle, Dvipas, etc. In other cultures also, I think the Mayan culture also, the Norse culture in Norway, same thing, mountain in the middle. So many ancient cultures have these stories, which look like, okay, mythological, because nowadays we don't think like that. But we see that the ancient people also were very scientific. The Greeks had very inquiring scientific minds. The Egyptians also had. At the same time, they had all sorts of strange ideas about other things. How is it possible they can have this scientific mind and still have stories like this? You'll find in India, also, science was there. We have certain persons like Bhaskaracharya, Aryabhata, and others. They were, mathematicians and astronomers. And they, very early, long before Galileo and all these other people had their theories, they concluded Earth is a round sphere and the planets are moving around the sun, etc. Long before. And at the same time, they also believe Puranas. They take the authority of the scripture. How is it possible? How can the people have accept this and also be very scientific? In the modern world, it looks contradictory. In the ancient world, it wasn't. Not only in India, but in Greece and Egypt and other countries of the world also. They have both sides like this. So it is only the modern world where we find this contradiction is there, and therefore we reject one. Okay, because it's like this according to science, therefore we reject everything else. That's a modern concept, where we exclude other versions of things. So in the ancient world, not only in India, but everywhere, same idea. They were not unscientific. They were also very scientific. But they also had very strange stories like this, where we have a structure of the universe or the world which is different from what we think it is now. So, how do we resolve the question? One is reject everything previous and say, okay, it's all false, all mythological, etc. And we'll only believe what modern science says. to do so, then we have to reject the authority of scriptures, because these are mentioned in scripture. And if we reject scripture, then we're also rejecting spiritual life. And we're saying that only bodies exist, matter exists, etc. So this is the choice that we have. We can just accept science. If we do that, then we ultimately have to do is accept that there is no meaning to anything, and there is no meaning to life. There is no meaning to morality or ethics or spiritual life or anything. It's all just meaningless, and there's no point in actually living in the material world. That's actually what you have to conclude if you really accept science literally. That's all it is. It's just all chance, that's all. Yeah. Now, nobody wants to accept that. Animals don't think about it. But the human being does. But therefore, the human being, if he's not going to accept that life is meaningless, then he has to start inventing things. So we get all sorts of new religions coming up in the modern world, because they don't accept the old scriptures. Well, they got to hold on to something. So you get new religions, you get new philosophies, you get all sorts of ideas coming up in the modern world. People want to believe in something. All sorts of theories about everything. Huh? So people live for these things. Activists with different movements and different things, animal rights movements, or this movement, or that movement, or green movement, or whatever. You get all sorts of movements, environmental movements, democratic movements, whatever. All sorts of movements people get in their eye because they want everything to be meaningless. If everything is meaningless, we cannot have politics at all. We cannot have communism or anything. If there's no God, nothing, there's no... What's the use of communism if my life is meaningless? The government shouldn't exist. It's all meaningless. Human endeavor should be meaningless. So nobody wants to accept that. So therefore, we do have various theories, isms, etc. in the modern world that replace religion. So we get communism, capitalism, so many other things around, existentialism or whatever, different philosophies, to try to avoid nothingness, a vacuum in our existence. The other alternative is don't reject the scriptures. And we can get guidance from them. Instead of speculating and making new theories on our own, let us accept what the scriptures say. Of course, we have two aspects of the scripture. One is the philosophical aspect, which we say is Vedanta and things like that. The other is the informational part, information about history, information about geography, etc., 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 which is basically material. Accepting the spiritual part, if we accept the authority of scripture, then we accept the spiritual part. There's no problem with that because it's beyond logic, it's beyond perception anyway. So there's no contradiction as such. We talk about spiritual life, spiritual world, spiritual body, and we can't really say there's any contradiction because it's beyond our logic of the material world. But when it comes to historical things, geographical things, except scientific things mentioned in the scriptures, then we say, oh, that's strange. And so why is there a milk ocean, or why is there a Mount Meru in the middle that's millions of miles higher, 20,000 miles higher, whatever like that. We can't see it. Why is it there? How does it exist, etc.? So these questions come up as related to things in the material world. As a spiritual world, no problem. Things in the material world we get a problem with. Because of this, some people reject the whole thing, and therefore they have to reject spiritual life. That's problematic. Nevertheless, this situation is there. How do we resolve this issue of contradictory things in the material world, which is not spiritual? So one answer is that even in the material world, there can be contradictory experiences. Things can look one way at one time, things can look another way at another time. Or we say, well, that's impossible because science doesn't accept that. But yes, science does accept that also. They didn't accept it up until Einstein or whatever. Now they have to accept it. Reality is not what we think it is. It's quite something different. It's not just some unchangeable solid substance like that. Of course, solid things don't exist anyway. It's all space, isn't it? We learn in science it's all space with a little bit of charges, electrons and protons and neutrons and other things there, all combined together. Most of it is 99.999999 space. So even what we think is a solid object isn't a real solid object. It's just a bunch of energy stuck in a certain form at a certain time. So, as I said, in modern science, it's a little bit different from ancient science and even Newton science, which took things like solid objects, etc. So, reality is a little bit different because it's not solid objects anymore. Then we come to looking at these particles, electrons, photons, and things. They don't act like they should act as matter. Huh? They act contrary to themselves. If we want to see a photon as a particle, it acts like a particle with certain properties. If we want to see it as a wave, it acts as a wave. And a wave and a particle are contradictory. So how can one object act in two ways, contrary ways? And it does. According to how we want it to act, even. So this is contrary to old science. Something cannot be a wave and a particle. But something does that. Photons do that, electrons do that. How can they do that? Nobody knows. So that's a contradictory factor in material object, a small particle. We can't explain it. So, therefore, we should accept that what we think is real on one level in our perception may not be the only way we look at the material world. Yeah? And therefore, these bigger descriptions, not just particles or whatever, but actual things like dvipas and things like that also is another way of looking at the material world. It may not be an island like we think an island is. It may not be milk like we may think milk is or whatever, or ghee or whatever. Nevertheless, the Bhagavatam is expressing the Bhumandala, part of the universe, in a certain way with certain pattern in it. That we should accept, even though we can't see it. So this is simply one way of explaining things. It is not the way we look at things now with our particular brain. If we examine the brain, what do we see? We see two brains. You don't have one brain, you have two brains. In the middle, there's a division. If you open up your skull, you can pull the two brains out. One half, left brain, right brain. So you got two personalities making two different observations of the world. And normally what we do is we perceive everything with the left brain, which is logical. So through this logical brain, we perceive the world and we memorize things and put the input in our thing. We see three dimensions, we measure things, etc. And this is where all science arises, through the left brain. So that is our perception in the modern world. But what about the right brain? What if you perceive with the other half of your brain? What would you see? Something completely different. It would not be logical at all. The left brain, you use logic and you use words to describe it. That's why we got so much libraries full of scientific things. They use words to explain things. Right brain does not use logic. It can observe, but it won't use logic. It won't use words. It expresses things in images, symbols, like flowers, lotuses, etc. So, what we have in Bhagavatam and other works is not a left brain observation of the material world according to science. That's all. How can you see with the other part of the brain, not the left brain? This is what the yogis do. They turn off their left brain completely. Stop all the mental functions of thinking, logical thinking. So once you stop that, then you can see the world differently. So that is exactly what is presented in the Bhagavatam, things that don't correspond to our left brain logical analysis of the modern world. So that's all we're seeing here. So it was understood, yes, in the ancient times. There's two ways of looking at the material world. Modern world, no. There's only one way. Left brain only. Scientific only. That's the only reality. But we find even problems with that in terms of science. That there's a problem there because science can't explain many things. So, therefore, the modern world actually is one-sided. It's dominantly left brain, logical thought process, and that becomes reality. Ancient world, no. Both sides were there. Left brain, right brain, balanced. It is a much healthier way of living in the material world. So, therefore, we should not reject these descriptions and find them completely imaginary or false or whatever. They have the reality, but it is different from this world, and therefore we cannot explain it in the same way. So we should not reject these descriptions.
Mm-hmm.